Well, good morning to you at 8 minutes after 5 o'clock on this Saturday morning. Orion Samuelson checking in for our weekly get-together, talking about the most basic industry on the planet, providing food, and now we're providing fuel, and we're providing cotton for clothes, all of those things coming from the agricultural community here in the United States. So thank you for joining us for our weekly get-together. And right now, I'm looking at my rain gauge, and after midnight, no rain in Huntley, Illinois. Temperature, though, is 31 degrees on my thermometer on the backyard patio. So it's a chilly morning, and but at least it's a dry morning. And winter did arrive for a lot of people in the upper Midwest this week. I've had photographs of 4 to 5 inches of snow on the ground in the Dakotas and in northern Minnesota, for example. And we've been hearing from a lot of listeners in that part of the Midwest crop production areas who they're saying winter is here, and indeed it did arrive. Something that is coming next week, but it's coming virtually, that's the National FFA Convention. There will not be thousands of blue-jacketed FFA members in the streets of Indianapolis, because the FFA convention will be virtual. Also got the word this week that the American Farm Bureau convention scheduled for San Diego, California in January of next year will be virtual. It will not be happening, so those Farm Bureau members that had planned to have some time in the San Diego area won't be doing it, because the convention will be virtual. A lot of changes in this year of the summer of what I'm calling summer of postponements and cancellations, state fairs, county fairs, a lot of other activity. The Farm Progress Show and Husker Harvest Days, and a lot of activity that I hope we get back on the calendar in reality next year as we move into the year of 2021. But thank you for joining us, and we're going to answer some questions that we get every year at Halloween time. Questions like, are pumpkins fruit or vegetable? And are pumpkins, you name it, we get a lot of questions. So Jim Fussell will try to answer those questions for you when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. We are coming to the end of the gardening season and the growing season, but there's still a lot of activity to cover, and we've got about 10 pounds of it to put in a 5-pound can this morning. Jim Fussell, good morning to you. And I know we're going to talk pumpkins, because the questions that we get every year are coming in this year. But you want to talk about something else first, so go ahead.
Yeah, real quickly, you know, we talked about repairing the lawn a couple of weeks ago. And I know a lot of people put it off because it was hot and dry. It's no longer hot and it's no longer dry. In fact, we've got quite a bit of moisture. So this is about the last chance you're going to get to scratch up the dead areas in your lawn and to sow some seed at 50-50 Kentucky bluegrass turf type perennial rye. I don't think you're going to need to get any water on it to get it to a quick start, but you might want to cover it with straw or a mat. There is still time for it to grow if we have a mild fall. If it doesn't, it will survive the winter as seed, even if it doesn't come up. The long-range forecast suggests that we're going to get some more warm weather and a little bit of dry weather. So it's time to get done with some of those chores before things get winter-like. Now, Halloween means pumpkins, or punkins if you prefer it. Roadside stands, all the normal outlets, places like the community pumpkin patches, and even the chains are loaded with pumpkins right now. The first question that we get is, are these fruits or are they vegetables? Well, the answer is yes. They're both. Botanically, botanically, this is the fruit of the vine. It has a flower, and it develops into a fruit. Now, that's botanical. Culinary definitions call this a vegetable because it's savory, and it's used as vegetable, not as a fruit. So you have both. They're fruits and vegetables. You can argue one side or the other as long as you want, but the answer is it's both of them. Another question, are they really pumpkins or are they squash? People say, well, you know, I've got squash, but the pumpkins, that's different, isn't it? They're both vine crops, and vines include things like the cucumbers, muskmelons, and watermelons, and so forth. But the rest of these are squashes. Now, there are two kinds of squashes. There's summer squash and winter squash. The summer squashes are harvested immature. That means that they're used fresh out of the garden. You don't store them. Things like zucchini, patty pan, straight or crooked neck yellow squash, acorn squash. Now, acorn squash is a strange individual because we generally use that as summer squash, use it immediately, but it is a winter squash as well, and it can be stored. The standard orange pumpkins are also squash. We call them pumpkins, but they are squash. And those are things like the New England pie pumpkin, which is the small one that we use. It'll make a pie. One pumpkin makes a pie. Jack-o'-lanterns, which are maybe 8 or 15 pounds. Then some of the bigger jack-o'-lanterns are Kentucky or Connecticut field pumpkins or Howden field pumpkins, and these go up to about 25 pounds. And we have a lot of exotic pumpkins. I know there's one that looks like Cinderella's carriage that is very popular right now. Then we get to the winter squashes. These are harvested when they're mature. And if you harvest them correctly, they'll keep until spring. So you can have squash all winter and almost until the new crop comes in later in spring the next year. Don't be afraid to get a few because you can store them. Now, when you buy these, you want to check that they are properly hardened off. That means that if you try to scratch them with your thumbnail, you're going to find that the skin is very hard and tough. If you buy these, be sure that if you don't use things like the acorn squash right away, keep them in a cool, dry place. If they're in a moist place or a warm place, they're going to deteriorate. But things like butternut squash, acorn, the Hubbard squashes, which are great big things, incidentally, they make excellent pumpkin pie, and the painting pumpkins, the ones that are white. Also within this category are the commercial pumpkins, which are brown, not orange. They look like great big footballs out in the field. And they have names like buckskin, which kind of describes what they look like. And also, within this category are the giant pumpkins. These are the ones that you see in the biggest pumpkin contests. Now, here we have a quandary. If they're not completely ripe, they're not pumpkins. So when they have the pumpkin contest, if you have one that's not turned yellow yet, you're going to have to enter this in the squash category if they're green. If they turn yellow, you can enter them in the pumpkin category. Now, there are a bunch of varieties, and you'll see these in the catalogs as Big Macs or Atlantic Giant. These are ones that have been traditionally grown this way. Actually, the people that grow these for the contests share seeds with one another sometimes, or they will pollinate some plants on their own that they know will produce great big pumpkins, and they'll get seed out of that, and they'll use those the following year. Now, incidentally, the giant pumpkin winner here in Illinois was from down in DeWitt County, Henry Bartimus. His pumpkin weighed 1,673 pounds. That's a lot of pumpkin, better than three-quarters of a ton. The heaviest pumpkin ever was grown in Belgium, not in the United States. It was in 2016, and it weighed 2,600 pounds, ton and a quarter. The largest pumpkin producers in the United States, incidentally, we can take credit for that here in Illinois because Morton, Illinois is the world pumpkin center. And here in Illinois, we grow twice as many pumpkins as any other top producing states here in the United States, including places like California or Pennsylvania. Now, for using pumpkins, carving pumpkins, the peepo type, which are the little pumpkins, the New England pie pumpkins, do make wonderful pies, and they can be carved out for a little jack-o'-lanterns. You need to You can paint them, too. Some people paint these. Now, if you paint them and you're careful with them, you can peel all that skin off when you use them and make a pie, too. Now, one other question, or actually that answers our question about them being squash or pumpkins. They're one or the other, depending on what you call them. The last question I've been getting is, where did the name jack-o'-lantern come from? Well, these originated from an Irish myth about a blacksmith, Irish myth of a blacksmith by the name of Stingy Jack. He was said to fool the devil several times, trying to trick him into getting himself the last drink at the pub. Well, you know, Irish tradition, and part of my family comes from Ireland, so I know that tradition. The last time, he tricked the devil into promising not to take a soul when he died. Well, Jack died, but the devil wouldn't let him into hell because he promised he wouldn't do that. But because of his dealings with the dark powers and the love of strong liquor, Jack wasn't allowed into heaven either. So the devil gave Jack a burning coal to light his way and told him he's going to have to wander forever out in the dark. The coal was eventually, he got tired of curing it with a pair of tongs, so he carved out a cabbage root, and he's roamed the earth ever since with that thing, and it's been emitting its eerie green light. Well, the Irish begin to call this ghostly figure the Jack with the Lantern, or okay. Jack-o'-lantern. So in Ireland, people make lanterns from turnips and put them in their windows to scare away Stingy Jack. And our ancestors that came from the old country brought the tradition here, but they found out that the pumpkins make one heck of a lot better jack-o'-lantern than did the cabbages or the turnips. One last thing. This is the last chance this week you're going to get to go to the community farmers markets and the roadside stands. Most close after Halloween. So you need to do things like pick up the winter squash if you're going to save those, onions and potatoes and so forth, and they do have them in bulk. There are some tomatoes and peppers out there which you can get and use them for processing. In the fall, the cabbages and the Brussels sprouts and cauliflower are excellent. They have those too. And they also at the garden centers and roadside stands do have things like garden supplies, straw, rose cones, bird seed, even have some tools, and they certainly have garden books. Well, it's about that. That's about enough for this week. But next week, we're going to finish up the garden year, and we'll call it quits for 2020.
Yeah, and let me mention the fact that so many of the farmers markets do celebrate Halloween with many different colorful activities. I know Tom's out here on Algonquin Road. I know the Goberts, who are south of where I live. And there's a lot of activity going on, so I do hope that we'll wrap up the farmers market season and the Halloween season in good style with a lot of fun. But remember, wear a mask, wash your hands, and try not to get too close to people. But it's been a good growing season, and so we look forward to doing what you suggest, and that is making plans for next year. It's time to start, isn't it?
It is. Definitely time to start. The garden season never ends, and it just moves indoors temporarily here in this part of the country while we enjoy looking at pictures and so forth and making plans for the next year.
And that's the word from Jim Fazell and the word from the jack-o'-lanterns at the farmers market. So have a good week, and we'll talk to you next week, Jim.
Okay, Orion, look forward to it.
That's Jim Fazell, our specialist in ornamental horticulture here on the Saturday Morning Show. Twenty-five and a half minutes after 5 o'clock, and yes, we can use agricultural products for things besides feeding cattle and hogs and poultry. As you just heard from the folks at Whiskey Acres, they turn corn into something else, but it's doggone good. So yesterday, an interesting report issued by the Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Trade Representative Office, a summary of agricultural trade between the United States and China, and how well are we doing on fulfilling the agreement signed in January, the Phase 1 China-U.S. trade agreement. So anyway, yesterday we got this report from the Trade Office and from USDA that covered the progress made to date in implementing the agricultural provisions in the U.S.-China Phase 1 Economic and Trade Agreement, which is, according to the report, delivering some historic results for American agriculture. So some of the facts from that report. Since the agreement entered into force, the U.S. and China have addressed a multitude of structural barriers in China that had been impeding the exports of U.S. food and agricultural products, and China to date has implemented at least 50 of the 57 technical commitments under the Phase 1 agreement. These structural changes benefiting American farmers for decades to come. China also has substantially ramped up its purchases of U.S. agricultural products, and to date, China has purchased over $23 billion in agricultural products, and that's about 71% of its target under the Phase 1 agreement. Some of the highlights of that report that came across my desk yesterday. Corn. Outstanding sales of U.S. corn to China are at an all-time high of 8.7 million tons. Soybean sales for marketing year 2021 are off to the strongest start in history, with outstanding sales to China double the levels of sales back in 2017. Sorghum. U.S. exports of sorghum to China from January to August of this year totaled $617 million. That's up from $561 million for the same period in 2017. And pork. U.S. pork exports to China hit an all-time record in just the first 5 months of 2020. And then beef, U.S. beef and beef product exports to China through August 2020, already more than triple the total for 2017. In addition to these products, the USDA expects 2020 sales to China to hit record or near record levels for numerous other U.S. agricultural products, including pet food, alfalfa hay, we ship a lot of hay to China, pecans, peanuts, and prepared foods. So apparently we are at least near the levels agreed upon back in January when the Phase 1 agreement with China was signed. The U.S. Trade Representative and USDA continue to work closely with the Chinese government to ensure that the Phase 1 agreement is fully and properly implemented so that the access for U.S. food and agriculture products will come close to meeting the numbers agreed on in that agreement that was signed back in January. So there's more to talk about in trade of agricultural products, but right now let's take a break and check the news here on 720 WGN. It's 24 minutes before 6 o'clock on this Saturday morning. Let me take just a moment to say thank you to WGN and to you for the interesting, fun, and memorable notes I'm getting about the past 60 years of my covering the agricultural and agribusiness community here on WGN Radio. It's been fun listening to the announcements that WGN has put together to talk about some highlights in my career that frankly happened so long ago I'd forgotten that, yes, I did things on the air that covered this situation or that situation. And thank you to the many of you who have called the special telephone line established by Gary Lang in McHenry, and I'm not going to have the time to answer all of them individually, but I collectively will say thank you for listening and thank you for your comments and memories on places we have been that we met and had conversation, and of course the big agricultural events around the world that I've had the opportunity to enjoy during the 60 years I've been part of the WGN family. So thanks to WGN and thanks to you for all of that. And coming up, we're going to talk markets. Mike Pearson will be checking in with market activity and has a special guest. But right now, it's time to say welcome to Samuelson Says. I'm Orion, and this week, talking about a new era for the National FFA.
I'm thinking about Dorothy.
Dorothy who?
There's no place like home. That Dorothy.
Oh, the one with the shoes.
And all she wanted was to get back home.
Home is a special place.
And 1-800-GOT-JUNK makes it even more special.
By getting rid of what doesn't belong?
By getting rid of what doesn't belong.
We love what we do.
Let us do it for you.
We'll give you back your big,
open,
magical home.
Because that's what you get when the junk is gone.
Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK.
Or visit 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com.
The 93rd Annual Convention of the National FFA Organization will be held next week in Indianapolis. But my, what a different convention it's going to be, because it will be virtual. Indianapolis will not be overrun by thousands of blue-jacketed FFA members, because most of them will be watching the convention on TV sets in the classroom or in their living room. And it really isn't the first time that FFA has had to adapt to change, because at one time, FFA did not allow lady members. Farming was done by boys and men. Also, at one time, agricultural education was only taught in rural high schools. It was not taught in city schools. But that, too, has changed. Since being in Chicago the past 6 decades, I've watched the development of the Chicago High School for Agricultural Sciences to give city kids an opportunity to learn about careers in agriculture and the work to be done on farms and ranches as well as in agribusiness. Now, that is being taught to city kids, and they are doing very well in finding new opportunities for finding employment in rural communities as well as in agribusiness. We wish the FFA members success in holding a different kind of convention. We will be sharing with you on our agricultural coverage, and you'll be able to watch it on RFD TV and FFA convention television sets. And we also wish the FFA, as it has always adapted to change, in doing new things in farming and ranching. I will miss being there, and a lot of you FFA members will miss being there, but just mark it down as a new experience and one that is history-making. So be safe, be well. My thoughts on Samuelson Says, a presentation of the Nexstar Media Group at 19 minutes before 6 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. 31 degrees on my backyard thermometer in Huntley, Illinois, but no rain overnight since midnight in my rain gauge. I thought I heard it raining a few times, but I guess it was all in my imagination. But harvest will probably be slowed a little bit. Combines will be parked for a day or two because too much moisture at the moment, but harvest has been moving right along, and we're going to talk about the progress of harvest and the impact on crops when we continue with Mike Pearson, who stops by here on the Saturday morning show.
Well, market gyrations continue as we work our way through the harvest season. To help us understand them, we are joined this week by Garrett Toy of Ag Trader Talk. Garrett, you're a farmer up there in northern Illinois. How are things looking in your neck of the woods?
We just finished up with bean harvest here last week, and I think most people are done with beans for the most part. Bean yields were about average. The later season beans did a lot better than the early season beans. But we're right about a bushel or two above our APH. Nothing really to write home about, but we're respectable. Now we're starting to get into corn harvest. I think we hear a lot of the same stories, especially in eastern Iowa. The lack of rain in August kind of coming back and rearing its ugly head. Harvest has been a little bit more enjoyable this fall because it's been drier. Last year it was so wet that it wasn't very much fun. But corn yields right now are running about 10 to 15 bushel less than they were this point last year in this neck of the woods. And that was largely because of the lack of moisture that we had at the end of season.
Gotcha. Yeah, that dryness in August certainly pinched yields for a lot of producers, and demand has continued to be strong. This week we saw export sales reported by the USDA of over 1.8 million metric tons. Garrett, when is the world going to stop buying corn, or where do you think this thing heads as we work through the remainder of 2020?
Well, you know, we've had the headlines this week that the inflation in Brazil, they're going to remove their tariffs. I think it's a headline. At this point, economically, it doesn't. The imports really don't work. If they are going to import corn or soybeans, they are going to come from the U.S. But right now, the economics don't work. But for the near term, we're still, even with the board rally, we're still the cheapest corn in the world. Brazil isn't really exporting much. Argentina's a little bit cheaper than us, but their farmers aren't really moving a whole heck of a lot of grain because of the depreciating currency there. But, the market's keeping up. The demand is keeping up with the higher prices, and we're, this week's export sales, we're a typical buyer of Japan with 400,000. Then we had China come in for another 400,000, and that puts their total commitments up to about 10.4 million metric tons. So we're not running away from anything. The market's been fairly manageable. I mean, this is a demand-led rally. I mean, there's still some underlying questions about supply, obviously, but this is a demand rally.
And it is a demand rally, given that's the fact for growers that are making some sales here as we roll through harvest. They're selling right off the combine, capturing this tighter basis in a lot of places throughout the Midwest. I've been asked by a lot of folks, should I look to re-own this on the board, perhaps a spring contract for the corn? What do you think, Garrett? Is it worth it?
There's a point that's going to be worth it, because I think the South American weather is going to be important. It's more so in beans than in corn at this point. But, I think everybody's been waiting for a dip to buy, and the counter-seasonal rally all through harvest hasn't really given you that much of an opportunity in corn or beans. And the one thing that's interesting, we looked up, since August 1st, this rally since 1974 is the largest percent-based rally in corn on record. Even more than 2010. We're a few cents less than 2010 on the rally, but on a percent basis, this is the largest rally on record.
I want to talk soybeans. Can beans make it to 11 before the end of 2020? What do you think?
We're close. I mean, I'm really surprised that we haven't, we're struggling. I mean, I think the farmer is selling at 1080 levels, but I think we're close enough that I'd be really surprised if we don't take a crack at it. I think the dynamics have shifted in the products. We started off the year with a tighter soybean oil supply. With the situation that's going in Argentina, that's led to a meal rally. Meal rallies are tendingly more favorable. We've seen a strong rally in soybean crush margins, and that's going to help the soybean market. But right now, I think the market's still trying to get the farmer to move beans. The spreads are inverted. Basis is firm. It's just a factor of this huge export book and trying to get beans to the market right now. And at what levels? We know in the next 2 weeks when harvest wraps up, it's going to be more difficult for the end users to originate beans. So basis and spreads, we could see a little bit more follow through. But the re-own at some point. There's an opportunity in here, but just not at this point. So.
Not at this point. And really, to make that opportunity present, are we going to have to see perhaps a slowdown in exports to get the board to back off before you'd feel really comfortable stepping in and re-owning some bean bushels?
The market's extremely long at this point in soybeans. So, I mean, everyone's kind of expecting that, you know, where's that next oomph going to get from that's going to push us higher? And maybe it's going to be meal. There's going to be a transition here. We've got a little bit of weather premium. I mean, everyone knows that the soybean plantings in Brazil are delayed. You've got a record book on here from the Chinese on exports. It's all about fulfilling the exports at this point and making sure beans move to the river and to the export channels. But I also think the end users are concerned that, you know, if you don't get the ownership now, they're really going to have to either bid up for basis later in the year, or, you know, the board's going to have to do a rally in order to originate beans, you know, once the farmers lock the bin doors.
Gotcha. Well, another commodity that is seeing some interest in getting it secured is wheat. This ongoing dryness, not just in the central U.S. Great Plains, but also across the Black Sea region, is creating some excitement in the wheat market, which we haven't seen in a while. Garrett, where do you think it goes from here?
Well, the market's been able to absorb the rally to $6 fairly well. I mean, the wheat market is entirely led by the Black Sea wheat in Russia. And Russia is the cheapest origin of wheat in the world. So wherever they go, we go. And the markets have continued to firm. We've had headlines this week that they were looking at potentially a 4 to 6 million metric ton state reserve to help protect their domestic millers. That could potentially take 4 to 6 million metric ton of wheat off the export market. You've got a fairly decent Australian crop. The eastern part of the country is wet. The western part is dry. And then the Argentine crop has been, drought and frost and issues of that point. But, I think everything is controlled by inflation and weather markets, and I think we could probably get another, maybe a move to 650 here in beans.
All right, something to watch for. Garrett Toy from Ag Trader Talk.
A chilly morning. My thermometer here in Huntley, Illinois, in the backyard, showing 31 degrees at the moment as the growing season comes to an end in your garden as well as cornfields and soybean fields throughout Illinois and the Midwest. And they're going to have to harvest through some fairly good snows in the northern part of the Midwest after this week's weather has happened. Let me add a little bit more to the story I did on China's agricultural imports. China's government is discussing permits for millions of tons of additional corn imports over the next year. That, according to three industry sources who talked to Reuters reporters in China. And the reason for that, there's a surge in animal feed demand. And after storms and drought damage tightened the domestic supplies, but a round of new import orders from China would make it the world's top importer of corn for the first time and likely drive up global prices of corn and other grains. Food security has emerged as a global theme during the pandemic, exacerbated in China by the African swine fever attack of the past couple of years that devastated the hog herd and left the pork supply tight in China, because China is the world's largest pork consumer and the second largest corn consumer. Those are some of the interesting changes taking place in agricultural trade because of unusual situations with attacks from the African swine fever decimating the hog production in China, and they're still working to bring that back to an acceptable level because they are, I've said this many times, they are the world's largest producer of hogs and the largest consumer of pork. As we take a look at the market activity yesterday, according to the Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, U.S. wheat, soybean, and corn futures all end of the week higher yesterday, and strong export demand continuing to push prices higher, and wheat notched the biggest gains, pushing toward a six-year high on concerns about drought in major production belts of the world, coupled with a flurry of overseas tenders illustrating the robust global demand for wheat. So at the end of the trading day yesterday, the December wheat contract up 11 and three quarter cents a bushel, ending at $6.34.5. December corn gained 3.75 cents a bushel yesterday, ending the week at $4.20. The November soybean contract gained 13 cents for the day yesterday, ending at $10.86.75 a bushel. And the livestock futures at the Mercantile Exchange saw hog futures snapping a three-session losing streak. That's the longest losing streak for December contract in 5 weeks, and live cattle rebounded from its lowest level since June 29. So not a bad week ending in the marketplace for grain and livestock yesterday. Next week, several things happening. The last day of October, those of us who will live in daylight saving time communities will move the clock back 1 hour. Daylight saving comes to an end, and so make note of that for Halloween night, because we will go back the old line, spring forward, you move ahead 1 hour. Fall back, you move back 1 hour, so that your clocks are on time and that you're on time for church and whatever other activities that you have coming up on the 1st of November. As always, we appreciate your time with us here on the Saturday morning show and look forward to summing up the week's agricultural activities as we wind up the week and the month on October 31st. Thank you, and our thanks to Bob Ferguson, the engineer who makes it all happen, and our thanks to you for listening to the Saturday Morning Show.